Mario Raviglione, director of WHO's Stop TB department, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
So this week, the WHO released a report on the state of primary care around the world, and I found this quote about tuberculosis. It says, "It makes no sense to treat someone's tuberculosis without considering their HIV status or whether they smoke." How often does this happen?
Well, I would guess that today, in the majority of the programs around the world, this is not systematically done. When it comes to HIV, there is definitely a progress. Over the last 2-3 years, we have seen more and more TB cases, once they are diagnosed, that are also referred for HIV testing or tested on the spot for HIV. This is growing, and it has achieved quite good levels in some countries like Rwanda or Kenya, where in fact now they are testing the majority of cases. And the testing obviously has implications, because once a person tests positive, then the implication is that they can be referred for the proper treatment for HIV if necessary, and the prevention of other bacterial infections, for instance, with the use of cotrimoxazole. In the case of smoking, I mean, this is something very important that we are becoming aware more and more, that a smoker is at higher risk of developing TB, and once TB is developed, at higher risk of dying from TB. So there is there space for counseling against smoking when a patient with TB is tested. I don't think it is done systematically. It is done in pilot areas in some projects, for instance Nepal, I'm aware of, but it's something we will insist on.
So recent literature that was reviewed by WHO affirmed what was long suspected, that, as you said, tobacco exacerbates TB incidence, morbidity, and mortality. So how does this knowledge change TB control and treatment programs?
But the reality is that, unfortunately, the impact of smoking on TB is before they develop TB. So once a program, right, a clinic detects a TB case, it's too late, because TB has already developed as a consequence of smoking. You know, it has facilitated the passage between the status of infection, latent dormant infection, into the stage of real disease. So it's far too late. What needs to be done, rather, is to advocate more that smoking cessation campaigns must now on also speak about the risk of tuberculosis, besides all the risk of other non-communicable diseases that are linked with smoking. So I would say that the impact on actual activities of TB program will probably be limited to counseling against smoking, because once you have tuberculosis, too late, but still you can prevent some deaths, because we know that it increases the risk of dying once TB has been, you know, detected and developed.
Now, one big focus of this conference is on health systems.
Right.
Can you talk about how weak health systems impair TB treatment and control?
When you have a weak health system, it means you have weak managerial capacity. You have weak services, weak primary care services. You have weak laboratories. You don't have sufficient and trained personnel, human resources. You don't have a system of delivery of drugs which are effective. So all of these elements are integral part of any TB control approach, right? So you don't have a primary care physician that can suspect tuberculosis and therefore say, okay, I need to collect your sputum to be sent to the laboratory. Then you are in deep trouble, because TB will not be recognized. It might be recognized 6 months later when it is too late, people die. So there is no doubt in my mind that health system strengthening is paramount, not just for TB, obviously, but for all disease control programs that are there in the world, whether they deal with TB, with HIV, with malaria, with child health, with other diseases that are there, that are out there. So it is absolutely something that we are supporting, is integral part of our new strategy, you know, the Stop TB strategy. Element number 3 speaks specifically to contribute to health system strengthening. It means that national TB programs, their managers, need to work with the understanding of what is going on in the broader discussion about health systems and take the measures that are needed.
Can you give some examples of where those national TB programs have contributed to health system strengthening?
It's something very important. We have the belief that, in fact, national TB programs, when they are well structured, right, which also depends on the surrounding environment, meaning, you know, if there is a good TB program normally, that is a good TB program because the health system works, right? But you see some elements of TB control that really can contribute to the overall system capacity. For instance, I mentioned one issue that was discussed at length a couple of days ago here, that of the engagement of all providers outside of the national programs in TB care. That is something, I would say, fairly innovative for disease control programs. I think we are the first one in TB that really has pushed that notion around. And even last week in WHO in Geneva, we had a seminar on the issue of engagement of private providers. In general, this was organized by the health system strengthening people, just to tell you that these models are the ones that can actually be easily, in a way, spread to other disease control programs. That's an example, but, you know, the involvement of community workers is another one, because community workers are out there that cannot be specific for TB. They need to be trained on some basic thing, and TB programs have contributed in many places, in many settings, or the monitoring capacity of TB, which is rather unique. There are only probably a couple of other, like the vaccine programs, that monitor things like we do in TB control. These are all models that can be expanded and used then for other conditions.
And you mentioned that you had a meeting last week at the WHO. Do you feel like this issue of collaboration is more on WHO's radar screen and given more importance than, say, a few years ago?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, the entire organization now, with the new administration and the new director general, is focused very much on primary health care and on health system strengthening. So we are now celebrating the 30th anniversary of the famous Alma-Ata declaration that was on primary healthcare, and we feel that we have a lot to contribute in terms of TB control to the broad agenda of WHO. But that's you know, basically all that we are talking about in Geneva now is the strengthening of the health system in such a way that any disease control then can be delivering what needs to be delivered. That is an important thing. There are people talking about synergies. To me, it's not so much synergies, because I never understood why some people believe that TB control programs are sort of outside the health system. They are integral part, obviously, of the health system. It's many years that we are preaching that primary care is essential for TB control. We are not dealing with agriculture. We are dealing with health, and we are part of health system and ministers of health and ministries of health and their work.
And when you and I spoke a couple years ago, you used the word nightmare to describe the extensively drug-resistant TB situation coupled with HIV and TB co-infection. Would you still use that word to describe it, and do you think it's gotten better or worse?
Well, I would probably use now the word catastrophe if I can, because the issue of MDR and XDR TB, now we know, thanks to the report that we issued earlier this year in February, is actually worse than we thought. There are parts of the world, namely the former Soviet Union, some countries there, that have achieved the maximum level ever described in the history of TB control. There are a couple of places where more than 20% of the cases of TB, the new cases of TB, when they present for the first time, are multi-drug resistant from the start, which means that they have to go to different regimens, one out of five. So that is serious business. And fortunately, it's not something that is spread all over the world. MDR is everywhere, but not at that level of 20%. So focus really needs to be now on the MDR and XDR TB care and control. And for this particular reason, we are holding a major meeting next year in April, most likely in Beijing, where we will call the 27 highest burden countries for MDR TB, for multi-drug resistant TB, and discuss policies and what they need to do in order to face this growing problem.
Now, could you characterize how well you think political leaders are addressing this issue of drug-resistant TB? Are they on board with, in terms of acknowledging the problem and putting funding towards these programs, especially in these 27 high-burden countries?
Definitely not. Unfortunately, the reason why, actually, we want to hold this meeting in Beijing is exactly that one, that we want to make political leaders and ministers and so on much more aware of the consequences of having this growing epidemic, you know, in their own country. If TB gets more and more into MDR-TB, in essence, if MDR-TB strains tend now to replace, in some settings, normal tuberculosis, we are all in trouble because we don't envisage completely new regimens or completely new drugs, right, for the next several years. So we have to handle the problem with what we have today, and therefore we have to limit as much as possible the creation of MDR-TB, which is something that begins with good TB control program in place to basically turn the tap off in the production. And it means at the same time managing the cases that exist already. So this requires a lot of resources. And these resources are not just TB control program resources. They require health system strengthening. We need to have proper primary care, once again, that detects the cases. We need to have proper laboratories to make the diagnosis, even using now the more modern tools that we have available. We need capacity to procure and to manage drugs such as the second line drugs, which are, you know, difficult to manage, difficult to obtain even from the national program perspective. So there are a lot of bottlenecks that needs to be, in a way, faced. And if we don't have political commitment, broad government commitment, we are not going to be able to face it. So just to conclude, I wanted to say that the Baltic countries are a good example on how this can be faced. And they are about the few in the world that have done it in a proper way.
Now, you mentioned treatment and managing the treatment of the MDR-TB right now, and one statistic that I found was less than 3% of current drug-resistant cases are actually treated according to WHO guidelines, which is pretty alarming. So why is that?
Because of the bottlenecks I was talking about just now, many countries are just not equipped to do the job. Once you don't have a laboratory that is capable of detecting multidrug resistance promptly, right, you don't even know that multidrug resistance exists. So let alone, you know, the idea of treating them. So just as an example, so laboratories is a bottleneck. Proper drug availability supply is a bottleneck. Infection control measures, which are almost inexistent, not just for TB, in general, in the world, in hospitals, in polyclinics, is another bottleneck. The outbreak in KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, was probably largely due to transmission within the congregate setting, right? So we have a large amount of issues, challenges that have to be really faced if we want to progress on this number. I must say also that through the Green Light Committee, we are seeing now basically doubling of the number of cases compared to the year before that have entered into programs that we would consider, you know, up to the international standards. So, for instance, in the last 1 year, we estimate about, if I remember correctly, 25,000 or so cases having been approved for treatment, compared to the 25,000 we accumulated until last year, since 2001 when we started. So this is progressing, but as you mentioned, we are far from reaching out to the probably nearly 500,000 MDR-TB cases that arise every year in the world.
Now, one thing that seems to have been bubbling up within the global health and development communities is some concern about funding in the future, given the current global economic situation. Do you share that concern?
Oh, definitely. We don't know yet the consequences, right? Too early in the game to understand what the consequences will be of the current financial crisis on development cooperation agencies, for instance, and therefore on the grants in the end through mechanisms such as the Global Fund, for instance, for HIV, AIDS, TB, and malaria, or through other bilaterals, you know, the consequences of the funding that goes to these agencies and then from these agencies is transferred as international support to the countries in need. We also don't know the consequences of the financial crisis in the west of the world on the south of the world. So there is a concern there. There is a concern also that some donors are now. I was just reading this morning a piece by activists. They are saying basically some donors are shifting away resources because they believe the job on HIV, TB, malaria is done. The job on HIV, TB, malaria, in my view, has just started. We are, I think Churchill said that, we are not at the end of the world, we are not even at the beginning of the end, we are just at the end of the beginning. So there is a lot of work to be done if we really want to face epidemics such as that of tuberculosis. So I believe that the amount of money and investment that should go into health from developing countries, from international agencies, has to double and triple, not being shifted away or reconsidered because of other issues emerging. These other issues, such as the system strengthening, are major ones. So they need to have their own money, like the fight against HIV, TB, malaria need to have its own money. Otherwise, we are going to lose all the progress that has been done in the last few years.
And last question, going forward, you just laid out the groundwork that there still is a lot of work to be done. What do you hope will come out of this conference to contribute?
But you see, this conference, like any congress on tuberculosis, normally is the conference of the converted to the issue. So all of the people here, the 2,500 or so, know that TB is a big issue. That's why they're here. The problem is to reach outside of our, you know, little community, in a way, of converted to the TB fight, and making people, politicians and others, decision makers, basically, understand that here we are dealing with a serious problem, a problem, once again, that kills 1.7 million people every year unnecessarily, a problem that risks becoming much worse than it is today because of this growing MDR-TB problem, if that is not stopped in some parts of the world.
Mario Ravlioni, Director of WHO's Stop TB Department, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. All right.